In March 2000, just days after a highly anticipated and successful gallery showing, the acclaimed conceptual artist Mark Lombardi was found hanged in his Williamsburg apartment. It was immediately ruled a suicide, but the mysterious circumstances of his death following the recent onslaught of public attention toward his controversial art led some people to wonder if it was a suicide or murder. Patricia Goldstone's Interlock, Art, Conspiracy, and the Shadow Worlds of Mark Lombardi is a comprehensive biography that explores the life of Lombardi, his death, and his lasting impact on the art and technology community. It's a great pleasure to welcome Patricia Goldstone to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joe, for having me.
It is a pleasure. What brought you to want to look at the life of Mark Lombardi and obviously tackle the questions surrounding his death?
Well, that's a funny story because it can show you what tiny things books grow out of. I read an article about Lombardi in the Wall Street Journal that came out a year after his death. And there, what you know, the Wall Street Journal does these little pencil portraits of its subjects. And there was this portrait of a goofy-looking artist with one of Mark's drawings raying out behind his head. The drawing caught my eye. And I realized it was an interlock, which is a form of flowchart commonly used in accounting and antitrust litigation to trace overly cozy relationships between boards of directors. I found myself wondering why the Journal, one of our preeminent business publications, didn't even mention that here was an artist who created art out of interlocks. So that would have been my lead, and I carefully clipped it and filed it away and didn't take it out again for years until 2007, when I was finished with a book I'd been working on and the financial tiles started falling off the roof. I started reading up on Lombardi, and I found myself wondering if the 2008 financial crisis could be traced to the connections that he had made in his work, and why nobody in the law enforcement end of things had seriously scrutinized his drawings. But, you know, even more than that, I'm fascinated by characters who make us look at history in a totally different way. Mark's grasp of what was going on under the surface of the financial bubbles of the 1970s, 80s, and 90s was so acute that I felt that I was educating or re-educating myself about a period I'd lived through by writing about it. I was also really fascinated by Mark as a character, how this one working-class guy armed with nothing more than a BA in fine arts could figure out things that even a Senate investigating committee with all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't.
When you start a project like this, it's inevitable. I assume it's the elephant in the room of, was it a suicide or murder? Did that occupy much of your time, or were you more interested in him as a character?
Well, I actually began my research by getting hold of the police reports through a friend of mine in homicide in New York. They're quite difficult to get hold of. And I realized there were a lot of anomalies in them. Time of death was never established, for one, and establishing death by hanging is a controversial area of forensic pathology. That and the fact that the police based their verdict of death by suicide on the testimony of one witness who appeared increasingly unreliable during the interview process kind of started me going. I actually tracked down the two cops who found him, and one of them showed signs of doubt. The other pillar of evidence, the absence of signs of struggle and the fact that the door was securely locked from the inside, are also questionable, as I explain in my book. And then, of course, there's the exact nature of what's in the drawings, which could cause any number of people to want him dead. I don't have anything like a smoking gun, and I don't have the power to subpoena people. But certainly the weight of circumstantial evidence makes me feel that at a minimum a lot more questions should have been asked at the time of his death. And the fact that they weren't made me very queasy.
You talk about this in the book, but you say that he's perhaps the only artist whose work has been studied in depth by the FBI and the CIA. Talk a little bit about that connection and how he got on their radar.
Well, that's a fascinating question. I mean, Mark was an SDS member as a student, and he was always convinced that the FBI was following him around. But actually, I was told in the process of researching my book by one of the leading computer scientists in the country that the FBI, the CIA, the Department of Defense, and the Office of Naval Research all had to study Mark's work in the wake of 9/11. They were looking for clues for terrorist social networks and also for traffic analysis tools. And as explained in my book, his work has been invaluable to the computer science community in that regard. But none of that was really made public until my book came out.
Talk a little bit about how he arrived at the point where what he was doing became art and became of interest to others, to an audience.
Well, that again is a fascinating story. Mark actually began the research for his drawings with the idea of writing a book, but he said that he couldn't really keep the narrative in his head, so he started drawing it out. He was living in Houston at the time, and his skills, particularly as a researcher, were very widely known in the art community. And he was recruited by a very prominent Texas politician to be part of an investigative salon that was looking into the banking, intelligence, criminal network behind the Texas subprime crisis in the 80s. And that network also happened to be very interlocked with the Iran-Contra network. So he began by drawing interlocks that were easier to read than those the FBI had at its command, and was actually taught how to do this by the lawyer who deposed Adnan Khashoggi, who was the famous Iran-Contra middleman. But Mark always had the idea in mind that he would create artwork out of these. He was immensely ambitious as an artist. And when it became apparent that he couldn't publish a book, he turned out an immense body of work in a very short period of time that answered 8 questions that John Kerry's Senate investigating said it lacked the resources and the time to explore, and those drawings became the basis of his first solo show in Houston, at which point the politician who had recruited him broke off their relationship, and they never saw one another again.
The drawings, as you note, straddle the line between art and information. Talk a little bit about that term interlock and what it means.
Well, an interlock, as I said, is a form of flowchart that traces overly cozy relationships between boards of directors. But Mark actually used his interlocks to trace connections, interconnections between players in intelligence, organized crime, corporations like banks, and governments in the reaches of the shadow banking industry, something we've heard a lot about since 2007. He was way ahead of Edward Snowden and Julian Assange in releasing a very wide swath of extremely uncomfortable information to the public. His work is a form of visual WikiLeaks.
And his background for that information, where he got that information?
Well, you know, I rather resist the idea that Mark was a conspiracy theorist. He researched his work in much the same way as an academically trained historian. He learned about the flow of hot money largely through published material by well-respected academics and journalists, with one important exception, and that, of course, was what he obtained through the politician who initially engaged him. But he would digest hundreds of books, which I also munched my way through in the course of researching the book. He would digest them down into bullet points of academically annotated information, which he compiled in thousands of 3x5 file cards. Then he would arrange these, much like a movie director doing a storyboard. He would arrange them on the floor next to the drawing he was composing.
And on those cards, there would be information, and one would lead to the other?
Well, the cards, which I read through, there are what's left of them, which is about 14,000 file cards, are archived at the Museum of Modern Art in New York. He basically noted players and their connections on each card, and then he would interconnect the cards.
You say that what's left of them. You indicate in the book that there is an apparent disappearance of index cards having to do with President Bush from the from the MoMA archives.
Well, there's a wide discrepancy in what people told me about how many cards there were. One person told me there were as many as 40,000 cards, and that was one of Mark's main collectors who had access to his studio. What is in the files at MoMA, what I saw at least, are 14,000 cards. And I noticed that all but four of the cards related to the financial activities of the Bush family, on whom Mark focused much of his attention for reasons I go into in the book, were missing.
And the inquiry into as to why they would be missing or where they went, is it known whether they were ever received by MoMA?
That's a question I had trouble getting an answer to. I was referred to MoMA's PR department, and that was more or less the end of it.
How many do you believe are missing, and does it ultimately matter?
Well, I think it does matter simply because of the amount of work that he did on the Bush family. There have to be more cards than what I found.
What would having the cards or coming in to obtaining the cards, what would that benefit anyone?
Well, Mark was actually pretty equal opportunity in his finger pointing. He did focus a lot of attention on the Bushes for personal reasons, and he did die during a hotly contested presidential election, in which at least one of his drawings might have had an impact. But he did a lot of important drawings that also focus attention on the Clintons and their links with the Lippo Group of Indonesia and the Riady family, which were the source of accusations of Chinese influence peddling in the U.S. during Clinton's administration. Also, Mark Rich, who is famously connected to the Clintons, was one of the key middlemen that hooked Mark's drawings together, as was Jackson Stevens, who funded both the Bush and the Clinton campaigns. Mark was really more like a social scientist than a political partisan, and that I believe his overwhelming interest was in getting this whole financial system of systems down on paper.
Ultimately, what do you hope you accomplish with the book?
I hope people read it. I think it's a great story.
And do you want it to go on from here?
I have plans for a dramatic rendition of it.
But meaning, do you want there to be more investigation? Do you want there to be more to the story to open up a further discussion?
Well, I think it would be very beneficial if a further discussion were opened up, of course. It was suggested to me that people might come forward with new information in the course of the book's trajectory, and I would welcome that. I'm easily reached at my website, patriciagoldstone.com.
Well, the name of the book is Interlock, Art, Conspiracy, and the Shadow Worlds of Mark Lombardi. Patricia Goldstone, thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate you being on the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book is Interlock. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.